Live from the Rowe Auto Group Westbrook Auburn Studios, it's Ray Richardson on WLOB 100.5 FM.
Say forget snowy white. Can't you hear the prayers of every childlike heart tonight? The Rockies are calling, Denver snow falling. Somebody said it's 4 feet deep, but it doesn't matter. Give me the laughter. I'm gonna choose to keep another tender Tennessee Christmas.
7:35.
Only Christmas for me.
You're listening to 100.5 FM. Good morning. I'm Ray Richardson. Thanks for joining us. Before we get back to Dr. Peter Earle, I want to thank Mark Riley, Matt Jacobson, and Pete McVetti yesterday for filling in. The trio has just gelled. They are a well-oiled hosting machine. As you know, all three guys are veterans, so they bring a different perspective to these conversations, and I'm grateful to them. I'm also grateful yesterday they brought up the fact that my new book, Carter Finds Christmas, is out on pre-sale. I don't even know what this means. Dee Dee and I are trying to figure it out. During the break, we were notified that it is sold out in South Africa. I don't even know what that means. But Amazon notified us it was sold out in South Africa. So I don't know. I don't know what it means. Anyhow, it is exciting, though. But it's a story of my granddaughter Carter's epic journey to find the true meaning of Christmas. It's a children's book. It's targeted to, you know, families who want to embrace the magic and imagination of Santa, but also not lose the true meaning of the Christmas season, which is the birth of the Savior, Jesus Christ. So it is available on Amazon. It's available in Barnes & Noble. It's about to be available in a bunch more places, I think sometime today. But, yeah, it was a little startling. We got a notice that it's sold out in South Africa. So I don't know what that means, but I'm grateful. You know, we live a life of gratitude. As I've always said, if Dee Dee and I didn't live in gratitude, we should be ashamed of ourselves, because while it's not perfect, nothing is, it's pretty doggone good. Dr. Peter Earle, the economist with the American Institute for Economic Research and a big fan of Go Army for the big ball game this Saturday, is still with us. Doctor, thanks for being with us.
Yeah, you're very welcome. And I have already ordered my copy of Carter Finds Christmas. So.
You have?
Yes, I have.
Well, that was very kind of you. Thank you.
So I recommend everybody do so for that young person in your life or the young person inside you, because very excited to read it. And I'm not surprised that it's starting to sell out. I think it's gonna be huge, frankly.
It's I said to my brother was asking me over the weekend, we were down in Florida, you know, what did I think was going to happen? And I simply said this, that obviously I wrote the story, so I think it's a good story. But the illustrators of the book took the story to a level that I couldn't even imagine. They got what we were trying to do, what Dee Dee and I were trying. Dee Dee was a big part of all this. After I wrote the initial story, she went through and edited it and tried to really help shape it. So as I've said, this book is as much hers as it is mine. I know my name's on it, but but the illustrators took this book to a place I never imagined it could even go. And they're just so really understood the heart of what we're trying to do. And so we'll see what happens. But I will say I'm really proud of it, not because I did it, but because of the message that it sends.
Well, I can't wait to read it. Yeah. It looks wonderful. So that's a gift to myself for Christmas, and I'm sure I will really enjoy reading it. And I don't have any grandkids just yet, but it'll be around for that time.
Yeah, but you will. My son Connor, Carter's father, said to me, "Dad, the beauty of this book is we can read it to our children, and 20 years from now we can read it to our grandchildren, because it's an evergreen book." So we'll see. I mean, you know, who knows what will happen here, but pretty wild stuff. All right, let's get on to the stuff people actually care about, which is the jobs numbers last Friday.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, we got the jobs number last Friday, and of course, This was the number because the number we got in October was really bad, but it was obscured a lot by the two hurricanes and by layoffs and by the very brief port strike. So we wanted to see, a lot of us were looking in the economics field, we wanted to see how things looked in the November report. So did they sort of come back? Was it the delayed recovery, that sort of thing? And you know, basically what we saw is, as always, some mixed messages. Jobs did recover. However, what we found was that basically two things. First of all, hiring began to improve. And I think the hiring began to improve because we have news of a new administration coming in. I think that we're already seeing sort of a bounce and a positive effect, knowing that we're probably going to get some regulations rolled back. We're going to get a lot of the green stuff rolled back. So we saw things like leisure and hospitality, manufacturing, a whole bunch of areas, financial services, construction, transportation, warehousing, mining and logging even, all pick up in employment. So that looks to me like sort of a halo effect for the administration that's coming in, and that's great news. We haven't seen that in a long time. On the other hand, we did see the jobless rate, the U3 rate, go back, tick back up towards 4.3% from 4.1%. And at the same time, we have workers that are reporting it's a lot harder to find a job. It's taken the average worker 10 and a half weeks after leaving employment or losing employment to find a new job, which is that's not a great phenomenon, and that's sort of ticking up slowly, has been for the last few months. Maybe that'll be arrested, you know, with the new administration. Maybe it's just a seasonal thing. We'll have to see.
So one of the things that I noticed is the revision. And this time, typically when we see revisions of the job numbers, they put out the U6 number, and they put out the unemployment number, they put out the U6 number, and that's all the headlines.
Right.
And then they go back and they revise it, and it's almost always downward. But when they did the revision this time, it wasn't downward, it was upward.
Yep. I mean, so we had a very, very skewed couple of numbers because of all the hurricanes and all that thing. So, it's usually, I would say that, you know, what you said is correct. We usually see the revisions downward, unless it's owing to something like a natural disaster, a hurricane, something, then oftentimes it's upwards, because a lot of times people will say they're going to take a week off and they wind up taking 4 days or whatever, or, you know, there are layoffs and then people come back very quickly, or layoffs are planned and then they don't occur. So there's a lot of reasons for that happening. But even so, I mean, you know, we have a labor market that's, I think, kind of precariously situated, and it will be good if the new administration gets in there and they kind of make it clear, you know, we're back to the business of business. You know, the government is not going to be an instrument for taking your money and giving it to experimental energy companies and all that sort of, all their ideological friends, you know, that sort of thing. I think that one of the things we're seeing right now is we're seeing, you know, again, sort of a rebound in optimism and that kind of thing. And actually, I think this morning we get small business. Yeah, you know, look at this. Just as I'm saying it, came out at 6 a.m. NFIB small business optimism. Right, 35. The expected number was 95.3. The actual number was 101. Tremendous small business optimism, which is a great thing for America. It's a great thing for workers and for just citizens more broadly.
Yeah, I mean, we knew that was going to happen. Look, Trump's whole focus was, he really had three focus, if you will. And I think that they rank evenly in priority. Priority one is obviously to close the border and to deport those who have come into this country and committed crimes or have committed heinous crimes in their home country. Two, and I don't mean two as in, subservient to one, but two was the strong economy, grow the economy, make the 2017 tax cuts permanent, add more tax cuts to it, deregulate as he did. He was one of the greatest deregulators in all of American history. The Federal Registry, as you know, Peter, is where we keep all those rules and regulations. And when Obama left office, it was 97,000 pages. At the end of Trump's first year, it was 62,000 pages. They eliminated 35,000 pages of rules and regulations. And just for the people out there that hear that and say, well, he doesn't care about things, for those that are climate change fanatics, the carbon footprint of this country dropped all 4 years of Donald Trump's administration. So, you know, it wasn't as though he doesn't care about the environment. We just overregulate here. Those two things alone will lead to a hopeful economy, which leads to a prosperous economy. And then number three was obviously settling the world down again. And so there is a lot of optimism from people who actually pay attention to not rigid ideology, but reality, that those things will happen again.
Yeah, there's actually an expectation. I saw a report earlier this week that said that there's an expectation actually that that hiring is likely to shift from large firms down to small firms under the next administration, which is a very positive thing because that's where job growth creation is. So if we know that, if there are these estimates that the small firms and the mid-sized firms are going to be growing, that means a lot of job growth, and you know, hopefully that will reverse some of the negative trends that we see in the employment numbers. Again, the last number was not that bad, but there's still sort of cracks beneath the surface. But business optimism, small business hiring, less regulations, you know, cutting the Federal Register down to size, all of that bodes for a much better economy in the next couple of years. And I mean, as you always point out, Ray, you know, it's really not even 4 years. It's really 20 months is what we have to work with. So hopefully they get things in line.
Yeah, and it's not 20 months from January 20. It's 20 months from November 5th because 20 months from November 5th is we're well into the midterms. Historically, the midterms have not worked out well for the administration in power in the White House, but I think that there is a chance for a trend change in that regard if Trump and a lot of people like when, but I say if because there are headwinds that are the reality of politics, but if Trump is able to accomplish the things that I articulated earlier in our conversation, there's going to be an optimism in the country that I think may bode well. And I'm very, very hopeful that if he accomplishes those things, that the people of Maine who rewarded poor public policymakers in this election while the rest of the country was making change will recognize that maybe we ought to change as well.
Yeah, and the great thing about what we're looking at here is that we don't need to, you know, do a lot of horse trading in Congress or try to muscle the Fed. All we need to do is take off some of those chains, right? All we need to do, whether it's with executive orders or that sort of thing, all we need to do is make it easier to do business. And that's not very hard to do. A lot of that can be done day one, you know, week one, that sort of thing. So, again, I'm optimistic right now. I'm looking forward to seeing what court comes in the start of 2025.
Yeah, I said to my wife, when we left Milwaukee, Wisconsin, when we were out at the convention, I said to my wife on the drive home, we drove out because we had to take our studio with us, and that I had not felt this kind of optimism for the future of the country since 1984.
And 1980 or 84?
Yeah, well, 84 for me.
Right.
I felt like, you know, that was the convention happened. The week Trump was shot on the 13th, on a Saturday, the convention began on a Monday. He walked out on the stage 2 days later, and I know the state of Wisconsin shook when that happened because I was there. It was so thunderous. And from there, you know, the message was about making America stronger, healthier, greater, safer, more prosperous. That was the message. It wasn't a doom and gloom message that many have portrayed or a message of revenge. It was none of that. It was about all the things that we care about most for our country and taking those things and taking from the current state, which was not good, and making them great again. And there was a focus, not just from President Trump, but also from a multitude of voices, some elected, some not elected. Some were average citizens. One of the most amazing people that I met in Wisconsin, who has now been a guest on the show a few times, is a woman by the name of Ann Funder. Her son died from fentanyl overdose, and she calls it a poisoning, not an overdose, because and she acknowledged he shouldn't have been doing, but I guess he was trying a drug that he shouldn't have been trying, and unbeknownst to him, it was laced with fentanyl, and it killed him. And she taught me the difference between overdosing on fentanyl and being poisoned by fentanyl when you don't know that you're using it. And that was all part of the Let's Make America Safe Again night at the convention on night two. And she's been, you know, she's a very sort of shy woman, if you will. She got up there. She had never spoken to a crowd before in her life and got up there in front of I don't know how many thousand people and thundered away about this issue and how we have to solve it, and spoke with such great compassion for a child. I was overwhelmed by it. I was crying when I watched her. And then she came and spent a half an hour with me the next morning on my show. And most of the time she was there, I had tears in my eyes. And she did my podcast, and I had tears in my eyes again, because even though this woman, who doesn't seem like somebody who would be fierce in the face of this adversity, was so fierce because she knows the pain that other families are dealing with.
Yeah, I mean, it's a huge tragedy, but I mean, I think we all need to be thankful that some people turn those tragedies into, you know, a momentum for momentum for taking action, or at least, you know, sort of spread the word. And it sounds like she is doing as much as she can with that awful circumstance that befell her. It's just terrible.
Yeah, that's precisely what she's trying to do, is do everything she possibly can in the aftermath of the great tragedy that all parents fear.
Yep.
Doc, we have got to run. I am so grateful for you and the time you spend with us sharing your knowledge, but you do it in a way in which a guy like me can understand, and I'm grateful for that.
Well, I'm always thankful to be on the show. It's my favorite gig every week, and hopefully we'll speak again next week, God willing. Right?
Well, we certainly will, as long as the good Lord's willing and the creek don't rise.
Okay, have a great week.
All right, Take Doc, care. Thanks again. It is 7:51.
We fix people by fixing their car. I like being part of that.
It's a great feeling knowing that you've done something that looks good and you know the customer is going to be happy with.
We're doing great.